Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is my preferred weapon, Mr. Quigley. Do join me for dinner.
You got one shot left in that shooter.
This is FilmSack. Oh, sure.
Hello, listeners, and welcome back to FilmSack. This is FilmSack, episode 508, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind. welcome to the show. My name is Scott Johnson. With me today, Brian, his name ain't Roy Dunaway.
My name's not. Call me Roy. Just call me. Just do it. Oh, hi.
Hi.
Dear family, just an update on my job search so far. As you know, it is difficult to find a job for us Aboriginals in British-occupied Australia during the 1800s, so you can imagine I had high hopes when I came across Mr. Marston's newspaper ad for a manservant on his ranch. However, since taking the job, I have had to adjust my expectations to match the reality of manservant. Anywho, a Yank showed up today to shoot dingoes with his sharpshooting gun, and he has the biggest mustache you have ever seen. You wouldn't believe this thing. You could hide a couple of baby-eating dingoes and a wallaby up in there. And if that wasn't enough facial hair for your Cheeto-shaped grub acid trip nightmares, then the fact that he has two more mustaches on his face surely will. One above each eye. It's enough to make you want a cliff dive with no water. Oh, that reminds me. Had the baby. Too soon? Well, I have to go. It is time to serve Mr. Marston and the Yank their dinner. I hope they choke. Mr. Marston beats me, and the Yank is giving me eyes that are saying, before you make love to me, you have to say two words. How about no? There, I only needed one. Okay. Love you, and as always, didgeridoo and kangaroo poo. No animals were harmed in the making of this intro. I mean, why would I even say that? We totally harmed the animals, Randy.
Why were they so... Yeah, they were so adamant right as soon as the credits rolled to make sure they let us know.
You put that at your post-credit. Pre-credit.
I think they put it in both. They stuck it in both.
Yeah. Seriously,
think
we mean it.
Defend too much.
Yeah.
Seriously.
I think a horse died. Yeah, I think a horse got slaughtered, and they're trying to cover their tracks is what I think happened. All right. With us also, Randy, he likes to blow in his gun too. Jordan.
Aloha, Scott. Brian. And I simply cannot express how deeply disappointed I am in all of you. Here I am, brain the size of a planet, and not only have you allowed the Yank to kick me out of my own house twice, but now we're besieged by him. How do you get besieged by one man? That makes no sense. What do I have 10 single young men on the payroll for? Don't answer that out loud. We have a deal. Okay, here's what we're going to do. Smythe, you're going to put on my clothes and my hat. God, I love it that you're my exact size. Now, everyone else is going to leave me alone with Smythe for 1 hour, and then we're going to all go get a good Yank. Okay, I heard it that time.
Good job.
Where are those British soldier boys when you need them? I really need some more boys right now. The ones I've got are going down all around me. I mean, they're dying, you perverts.
Wow. This is the slightly more than PG-13 version of the movie that we saw. So, nice job. With us, finally, and also, Brian, you want to cry? Just cry a bit.
Just cry. Do it. Don't cover my mouth.
Yeah.
Listen, Cora, you keep calling me Roy, but you keep hitting on me, too. Nights out on the outback can get cold, and if I'm going to share your blanket, I have to double-check and make sure that you're of sound mind. I keep giving you hints and telling you that I'm an action hero whose last name begins with a Q, and you call me Alan Quartermain, you call me Johnny Quest, and at one point you called me an Audi Quattro. So, since you are having such a hard time remembering my name, let's move away from that, and I'm going to ask you three questions to determine if you have all your mental faculties. Question one. A man has a bee in his hand. What's in his eye? You guys can answer.
Can we answer?
Yeah. I don't know.
honey in his eye.
No, beauty, because beauty is in the eye of the beholder.
Oh, beholder. Got it.
Question two. What tastes better than it smells?
Kangaroo dew.
What gross got out the most?
Tastes better than it smells. Your tongue.
Your tongue is correct.
Oh, wow. Good job, Daniel.
Scott's not crazy. But the rest of you are not doing well, and the sun's starting to go down. But a rule is a rule, so you need to get this question right if you want me to stop fending off your advances. Question three. Is it Looney Tunes with two O's in tunes, or is it Looney Tunes T-U-N-E-S?
T-U-N-E-S.
That's correct.
Oh, is it?
That's
oh,
right.
Shit,
yeah. Because they're musical tunes.
That's right. I'm still going to sleep with my horse. Good night.
There was no way you were going to have sex. There was no way. All right. Well done, everybody. Hey, we watched Quigley Down Under, a film that I thought I had seen, but totally had not seen.
Really?
I'm very familiar. Well, I have a theory about this, and it's interesting because, you'll tell
you're
me.
You're thinking
if it's
of her alibi, right? Is that what you're thinking of?
No.
Yeah. Such a similar movie. Tom Selleck and Cindy Crawford?
Something like right? that, right? I think so. Maybe it was Mr. Baseball, where he goes to Japan.
And, Mr. Baseball when he's the giant in Japan instead of being the giant in Australia. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, well, good week for that with the Godzilla business. Anyway, so this, I think what happened here is I had a weird bias back in this time frame, 1990, this film came out. 5 years previously, 4 or 5 years previously, we had Silverado, a movie I adore and still hold in huge high regard. It's very similar, kind of cut from the same cloth, it turns out. Slightly smaller cast, a little more focused on a couple of people. But anyway, they're very similar. So I would have liked it, but I think I skipped it. And my memory now is sort of coming clear here. I think I skipped it because I had a bias about anything that was a Western but set in a country that wasn't the old West U.S. And I was annoyed by that because it felt like, oh, you're going to just – we're still not done with Paul Hogan enough. You just feel like you have to do this thing where you stick him there. And in truth, this movie works – if you just put it in Arizona, it didn't have to be Australia.
Did you notice that they went to the west of Australia?
Yeah.
I thought that right out of the very beginning that he puts his finger down on the West United States and draws a line over to the west.
Yeah.
Oh, hilarious.
Yeah. Because he was in Wyoming, right? And so,
right.
But I disagree.
Technically still a Western.
Right? Okay, so as far as the story goes, absolutely. The story could take place anywhere, but I think the importance of the parallels is what makes this movie interesting. And I actually think I wouldn't like this movie at all if it had been in the United States.
Yeah. I mean, it's the, obviously what you're saying is replacing the Aborigines with Native Americans, indigenous people here in the U.S.
Right.
And,
which,
you know,
but this really happened though. The things will not,
this really happened
down
yeah.
under, oh, not I know. Down I've, under, but the, yeah. the, you know, some of the circumstances.
I've listened to Midnight Oil.
This thing has to differentiate itself from Dances with Wolves in every way possible. Yeah. It has to, like, it has to literally change the wolf out for a dingo, like in every little thing. But seriously, like,
John Dunbar.
Yeah. You're not John wrong. Dunbar. I didn't even think about
just
this.
Just say two words,
now
John Dunbar.
I'm actually kind of annoyed now because this is like a thin cartoon version of that movie. You're not wrong, Randy. And that's a bad revelation that I just had.
I mean, it's not.
But it's so much shorter. And I think it has to get credit for that.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I'm not saying it just happens to come out, you know, a couple of years after Dances with Wolves. Like the script was apparently being written in the 70s. It's totally not got anything to do with Dances with Wolves. There's just a bunch of similarities because that's a Western, like it's within a few years of the Civil War and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But just like the white savior doesn't fall in with the Aboriginals, and that's like the big difference. Like this is a right. story about a sort of like white savior fighting the white villains, right? And the Aboriginals are kind of like bystanders,
right?
You know, so it's not quite the same.
And I agree. And to your point, Dunaway, I think you're actually right about this. Like in the end, I'm a little bummed out that I didn't give it the time of day back then, because I think that transposition of him being there and dealing with another indigenous people problem, that made it feel fresh and new and different. Whereas if it was happening here, we've seen a billion of those stories where the sharpshooting cowboy becomes sympathetic to the needs of the local or the indigenous and has to fight back against the cattle rustlers who are taking advantage of those people or whatever. And it would have felt like, oh, okay, another one of these, like of the 12 I saw this year.
In this case, it's a sheep magnate. And I just love that every wide shot of that ranch or station, as they call it, wide shot had a big pack of sheep walking around on dirt.
Yep.
Just walking around. How do those sheep live?
Yeah. I love that part too, because it was so swept under. It was like, for a while I was like, what's he even doing there? And I'm like, oh, okay. Occasionally you'll see sheep roaming around out wherever, because he's a poser, right?
Right.
That's what his character Marston really is. Marston's probably, I'm almost 100% sure his name is not Marston Waters. Everything he's doing is a role play.
Yeah, it's like
of wanting to recreate the Wild West, but in Australia.
Peter Billingsley or some name like that. It's like some super soft British London highfalutin name probably, and he just didn't use it.
Right.
Do you guys notice Ben Mendelsohn walking around there as like some kind of freaking teenager in this? My gosh. I don't know if you guys noticed that.
I didn't notice.
But the character of O'Flynn, he's like the younger guy that wanted to be the better shooter.
You mean if you practice a lot? No.
Yeah. Yeah, that guy. That's Ben Mendelsohn. That guy is like
an
amazing actor in everything, always. Like for a minute there, I went, wait, is that? Hold on. I got to look this up. And bingo, there he is.
Dingo.
He's amazing. He's in so many cool movies. He's in that, you know, you got him in your of course, that Star Wars movie, the Rogue One there. My favorite of the favorite of the modern Star Wars movies. If we had this argument, we should talk about this.
No.
Do we disagree with me?
We agree with you.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think it's my favorite.
But he was in The Outsider thing on HBO too, which was really good.
Yeah.
And we're remembering him for his portrayal of King George in Darkest Hour, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I didn't see Darkest Hour.
So. Oh my God.
Right.
I did. He's very good in that.
You need to see Darkest Hour, my friend.
Yeah, but who's Talos in the secret?
He's the Skrull
saved the
Skrull?
World.
Well, yeah, he's the Skrull in the Marvel MCU. So he's the Skrull that works with Captain Marvel, and he's going to be key to the whole like secret invasion thing that I think is going to be the Wanda and Captain Marvel thing that kind of comes out after that next movie.
Yeah, there's a picture of him. I just stuck it in there.
I love that picture.
Yeah, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. Also, I didn't know we were getting Ms. Marvel in that. That's exciting. I'm stoked about that. All right. Well,
I'm sorry, not Ms. Marvel, Captain Marvel. Did I say Ms. Marvel?
I thought
we are eventually going to get Ms. Marvel because she's been cast. But
she's in this photo or this photo. She looks illustrated.
Yeah, she's going to be a TV. She's going to be Disney Plus, I believe, series Ms. Marvel.
Well, that's exciting.
I want to say one more thing about Ben Mendelsohn. Not only is Rogue One my favorite Star Wars movie of the new generation, the post century generation, I think it's one of my 10 favorite films of the last decade.
Wow.
And I love it. It is not hindered at all by Ben Mendelsohn right from the beginning. Like, he's the first person you see. He comes to this little planet and invades a farm. And, you know, yeah. like, he is so scary
yeah.
and so, like, intense. I love that movie.
It was crazy how he out-intensed Mads Mikkelsen in that scene. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Which is impossible. It's like literally a physical impossibility to make Mads Mikkelsen seem less intimidating, but he did it somehow. And yeah, he's great. He was also, I guess he was in Far From Home as Talos in the Stinger. I don't remember there being a Stinger. I guess there was a Stinger. Anyway, that guy's great. We love him. He's great.
Right.
And here he is doing an early thing. Yeah.
As long as we're talking about the henchmen on the station or the ranch, I got to go. One of my favorite has got to be this rock covers me just fine. Roger Ward.
I know. He looked the part so well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Remember him from Mad Max? He was Fifi. Remember that?
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Not too long ago. Okay. Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
That guy's pretty cool. It's got a fun cast. Bunch of Australian actors you know from other Australian efforts. And I like the little German guy played by Ron
Alan Rickman.
Yeah, and Alan Rickman.
By the way, the secret to a good, I wrote this down because I want to remember it. The secret to a good Alan Rickman impersonation, consonants go out the mouth, vowels go out the nose.
Wow. Nice.
And you're also close the top of your throat. Is that what you're doing?
It sounds like you're about to, and it's like you're about to swallow something, right? Like you're getting ready to swallow.
Detonators. Yeah.
You do a really good Rickman. He's very Rickman in this. This is a sandwich role between Die Hard. He did some other stuff, but they were all very small and British. Between Die Hard and Prince of Thieves. His two meatiest American sort of cheese ball roles. This is where this one lands, is right in the center of that. And he was just sort of on the rise. I have some scrutiny about him, though. Let's do that real quick.
All right.
Scrutiny.
According to the trivia, Alan Rickman decided to take the part because filming was taking place in Australia. He always wanted to visit Australia, it says.
You know what? I think I will.
I don't.
Feels like a good opportunity for me
sir,
to finally be able to realize my dream.
Before you get on the plane, can you tell us your name? Bill Clay. Clay. Bill Clay.
Clay. Oh, yeah. God, you're one of them.
Anyway, I don't buy that. I think that's bullcrap.
Yeah, I think you could probably arrange for, if you're Alan Rickman after Die Hard, you can pretty much arrange a trip anywhere.
Yeah. That's a pretty weird one.
I feel like my mom wrote that on IMDb. Laura would be great. He gets to visit Australia. I bet he did. I'm writing this in here is what it feels like.
Yep.
Right.
We haven't even talked about Laura San Giacomo. She plays this crazy Cora, and she does an amazing job making you feel sympathetic.
She's great.
All the way.
Yeah, she's great. Yeah.
Well, especially because right out of the gate, when you first meet her, you're like, oh no, I'm not going to like this character.
Yeah.
You know, like everything about her is a feint.
Yep.
And you're just like, it sets you up to be, you know, upside down with her. And then she instantly turns on the amazing acting and screen presence and everything.
Yeah.
Like it's no wonder that she came out of this film with the, you know, Hollywood on a string and could do anything she wanted. Right.
Yeah.
Was this before Pretty Woman or after?
After.
No, that would have been before. Right.
Very close, though, because this came out in 90 as well. So,
same year. Okay.
Almost, yeah, the same time. Now, Tom Selleck does what he always does, which is be charming. He's just, you just believe in a wholesome, charming Tom Selleck.
He's good. Although he does look like proto KFC chicken kernel a little bit. Do you know what I mean? Like the way the mustache is.
That massive soul patch.
Yeah.
I expected
you know, if you're going to do that.
Yeah. I expected him at some point to make some reference to it because to me it seems so obvious. You look like him in his 30s or something. And that was weird.
He seems like he's taller here than any other movie or TV show I've ever seen him in. He just seems like, and maybe
it's because Laura San Giacomo is 5'2".
Yeah, probably tiny. Tiny little.
There's multiple shots of them side by side, like she's riding on a horse behind him, and they have her on a huge pillow, and you still can't see her because she's so tiny.
She was a high point of that miniseries of The Stand back in the 90s, the 94 Stand series. She played Nadine Cross, one of the chief characters in that book, in that series, and she was really good in it, like acting-wise, one of the better the better people. But my strongest memory of her, weirdly, is when I was watching Gargoyles with my then baby, who now is 26 and has her own baby. We'd watch Gargoyles, and she played the character Janine Rennard. And her
now you're
voice,
talking about the cartoon, not the cartoon. Gargoyles 70s TV
No, no, no.
Movie,
the,
right?
the cartoon in the 90s, like 94, 96, 97, something like that. Yeah, it was the animated thing. And she was just really good in that. Apparently, I'm just noticing now she's in Batman Beyond, which I'm watching right now. So I'll have to keep my eye on that. Lots of voice work, but she's still working, doing all sorts of stuff. She's in lots of TV and, you know, some movies.
No blockbusters or anything like that, at least for a while. But
Honey Boy, you liked that,
she was in,
right?
Honey Boy was great, and she's great in it. She's his therapist, and it's fantastic.
Well, you know what I've always said about Shia LaBeouf? That boy needs therapy.
He does, especially in that movie.
Yeah. Well, anyway, she's awesome. Directed by Simon Winsor.
Simon Winsor. We've crossed paths before, haven't we?
I believe so. Looking at him
the
now.
The Phantom.
That's it.
He was the director of The Phantom.
Yep. He also directed that Lonesome Dove series, which stands as one of the great Western things ever. Yeah. And he eventually made another movie with Selleck called Crossfire Trail, another Western I'd never heard of from 2001.
Is that a Sackett's movie?
Sackett's? I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I feel like about once a year I have to bring up the Sackett's book, and you always like act like you've never heard that word before.
I've never heard of it.
Sackett's, say it again. Sackett's.
I'll take that role. I don't know if I've ever heard that.
Yeah, I've never heard it. Sackett's.
It's not. Okay. I just looked it up. It's not a Sackett's book.
Okay, no. Good deal.
It is funny though. He's also the director of Lightning Jack, which is the Paul Hogan Australian Western.
Maybe he wanted to go to Australia. He lives there probably. Maybe. he's an Australian director, I'm pretty sure.
Australian. Yeah, he's from Sydney. Yeah.
It is interesting to see a director sort of get into a groove. Mm-hmm. Like, he didn't only direct Westerns, but he kind of did. Like, if you look at his list, it's like, it's things called Comanche Moon and Ponderosa, you know? And it's like, oh, yeah, because a director has to have a very specific set of skills to photograph horses being ridden across dirt and so on.
You know what's good, by the way?
Can I just say for a second? Go ahead.
I just want to throw this out there that if none of you have seen Comanche Moon, which is essentially, it's either a sequel or prequel to Lonesome Dove. I don't remember, but it's part of that story. It's freaking fantastic. And you've never thought of Steve Zahn as a freaking Western actor. He's great in this. Wes Studi's good in it. Like, that is a badass movie.
It's a prequel, by the way.
Is it a prequel? Steve Zahn is my favorite always. Anything he does.
No, he's great. Carl Urban's in that. Val Kilmer's in that. Also good. It's great. It's very good. If you haven't ever seen it.
This was a series?
Yeah, it was a miniseries. It was like a six-episode miniseries. It's very good.
Which nowadays it would just be a four-hour movie.
Yeah, well, I don't know. It seems like the short run series are kind of having a bit of a comeback right now. So maybe this. Yeah,
they just don't call them miniseries anymore.
But it's not even that old.
That's not a word.
What year is this? 2000.
And since it was released on the Paramount Network, I'll bet you can find it on Paramount Plus.
Yeah, and probably. For those who are just a little bit younger, they may not remember miniseries events, but lots of times the networks would have like it was starting on Sunday night. You would have your first episode of whatever you're gonna. It's going to come on. And for like the next three nights or so, it would be a mini series event.
Roots, Shogun, V.
Yeah.
Yeah. All V. I love V. Yeah. So good.
V's awesome. By the way, 2008. So not that old and really good. I would highly recommend checking it out if you haven't.
There's a prequel to Comanche Moon, or at least in the books, in the Lonesome Dove books, there's a prequel to Comanche Moon called Dead Man's Walk. And I've always thought that should be a zombie movie. I'm sorry.
Nah.
That
sounds all right.
True story.
The Western
one,
zombie.
The other Tom Selleck one.
Doesn't appear to be on Paramount Plus. That's a bummer.
Oh, it's not there? Nah. That's too bad.
No.
Check out this one, Crossfire Trails. Got Wilford Brimley Christian Kane. Let's see.
How would you have, but not Tom Selleck. Okay.
No, Tom Selleck's in it.
So you're telling me Brimley and how can one film contain that much stash? That's too much stash.
Yeah. In fact, they just call him Much Stash in that movie. They just have, who's wearing a much stash?
Too much.
Yeah. I get you. Barry Corbin's in it. He's got a pretty good mustache.
He does. Yeah. He does. Put Sam Elliott in there and the whole world will tilt over.
Oh, my Lord. Jeez. Yeah. I may have to see this one.
Joel Silver touching himself. And
actually, I'm a little bit thrown by this. I didn't realize. Oh, the Sacketts. Randy, there you go. I see it now.
Oh, I remember this now. Sacketts.
I didn't know that Tom Selleck's been in like 10 Westerns. I didn't know this. This is all news to me.
He like they talk about in this film, was born during the wrong time. Tom Selleck would have been an absolute amazing full on Western actor if he had been born a couple of decades prior. So, I mean,
right. Well, this is one of those funny movies where Harrison Ford always comes up because, you know, the whole thing about Tom Selleck was almost Indiana Jones and all that.
Right.
Harrison Ford was offered the lead role for this movie, but turned it down, which is a reversal of fortunes as Tom Selleck was the original choice to play Indiana Jones, but had to turn that down because he was making Magnum P.I. at the time. Imagine a world where he said, no, I'll be Indiana Jones. I'm done with Magnum. Just imagine that world. I don't know what that world looks like.
I just don't feel like it would have caught the traction it needed. I think Tom Selleck, even though I enjoyed him, I think the generation that pushed Indiana Jones was just a little bit younger, and we all saw Tom Selleck as a little bit older, and I think Harrison Ford kind of fit in with what we were trying to define ourselves as.
Yeah, and there's a vulnerability that Harrison Ford has that Tom Selleck doesn't have. Tom Selleck maintains, at least, you know, in the roles that we've seen of his, especially this one, he does maintain his cool throughout the whole thing.
Yeah.
Whereas Indiana Jones requires, you know, Harrison Ford to go, every once in a while.
Well, the funny thing about that is Harrison Ford is actually older than Tom Selleck, but you're right. I think we have as a generation, we perceived it different because we'd seen him on TV for so long. We just thought,
And you would consider him an old soul. He's got an older old soul kind of feeling to him. In this movie, I mean, this movie is gentle, if you will. But then when you really think about it, at least I did, I saw it and I'm like, oh, this is a very gentle film for the most part, because there's not a lot of, you know, quippy snaps and mean-spiritedness other than, you know, cartoon-style mean-spiritedness.
Yeah.
But then there's like so many – the death count, the body count is huge.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Huge body count.
Yeah, especially given that they're out in the end of the earth. Like they're as far away from healthcare as you can be. And so every time he shoots somebody, even if he just grazes them in the leg, they're dead. They're lying out in the desert dying for the next day.
Well, okay, so I'm glad you brought that up because I kept having gamer brain during this. And all I kept thinking about was, you don't dominate a map like this. I kept thinking of it as a map, number one. If you're just the guy with the sniper gun, you can't do close quarters combat. And I guess the advantage of being in Australia like that, in that part of the outback, is that you can always create space between you and
they're kind of setting this up as the beginning of the idea of sniping. There were obviously snipers going as back far back as you have archery, but in this particular world, guns are everything. And this guy is hired, like he gets a job by mail. And can you imagine, by the way, can you imagine getting a job by mail and then getting on a boat for 3 months?
That's
insane. Like he gets a job by mail because he is something new to the world, you know, someone who can kill you from over a kilometer away with a gun.
Right.
Right.
And it seemed to at least pique the interest of real world snipers, because they have taken on the term Quigley to mean when you snipe two together.
Oh, by the way, I'm going to call a little scrutiny on that. We've got some folks in some, you know, higher echelons of military service who listen to the show. I would love for them to email us in and just say whether they can get any kind of confirmation on this. The actual trivia is written like this. Snipers for the U.S. Navy SEALs call a shot that takes out two people simultaneously, a Quigley. And they based it on this movie. That's the theory. I think that sounds like bullshit.
Or the trivia.
We'll see.
That's the trivia, yeah.
We'll see. I don't know. That
always
one feels...
challenge the trivia if it's incorrect.
Yeah. But that's so, what the trivia is. So if we got any special forces people, I think Jeff Sire's got some experience in, it's Canadian, but he has enough sort of military stuff that he might even know that. I don't know. If anyone wants to write in and tell us how the military deals with this.
I call it hot damn. Hot I can't damn. Believe I killed two in one.
Yeah, hot damn.
That's what I call it.
Yeah. Well, when you were in the SEALs. You
right, when I was
everything.
In the SEALs.
Yeah.
Which I never was.
Well done.
And let's be clear. The gun is absolutely real. His feats of marksmanship are realistic. Mm-hmm. Like everything about that is like a lot of attention was put into making that as realistic as possible. That's a Sharps 1874. It really is 4 inches longer than the standard 30-inch barrel that would have been on that gun. It really could have been converted to fire a 45-110. Like, it's everything, you know, the double set triggers, very realistic, meaningful. Yeah. It's just like there's something about when you got all of that realism around shooting, you're going to want to take it one half step farther, yeah, right? Yeah. You're going to want to have him do some things that are sort of insane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's right. Pretty cool. The twist at the end of him actually being good with all firearms.
Right.
Was great. I didn't see it. Didn't see it coming. Yeah. That was awesome.
They really played with us with that because, I mean, we absolutely, the way they played it, and I tried to go back in my head, I was thinking, man, they really did sucker me. And I remember seeing this movie.
Yeah.
And I had totally forgotten that he was still capable with a pistol.
Yeah.
And, that was
isn't that great? It was great. It was like this moment of like, oh, yeah, of course you're good with everything. You just, and what was his line? Says, I said I didn't have a need for it. I didn't say I couldn't do them or whatever.
Right, exactly. And suck it. That's what he said.
Bill Clay looking at him like it's the worst thing he's ever done.
But man, I was freaking out because I've seen too many horror movies and too many movies where the hero turns around and the bad guy, especially, you know, he's going to shoot you. He's not dead. Shoot him again.
Yeah.
Shoot him two or three more times. Are you kidding me? Don't turn away.
Yeah. Exactly. Especially when he's still holding the gun. Yeah. Still has the gun in his hand.
Yeah. How the hell did they get away with, how do you convince this guy, this bad guy, this villain that you live on the ranch with?
Yeah.
How do you convince him to spare Quigley's life to begin with?
Right.
You have the woman, that's a, you know, you might keep her around anyway. Like, in real reality, they would have like enslaved her or something,
but
just shoot Quigley in the head and then go leave his body in the desert. You don't have to.
Right. I think that was the conceit that Marston was a wannabe. And the only way he could prove himself is he wanted that gunfight.
Yeah.
He wanted that gunfight, but he wanted to be on his terms. He had a cockiness to him.
That's the idea. Yeah. I think so.
Yeah.
I guess I was surprised by how that some of this stuff, you know, it's 1990, so we're talking about a little bit of overly sweeping music. It's a little too on the nose in some ways.
I like that
stuff too. And like Silverado does it, and I unabashedly love that movie as well. But I guess what I'm trying to get at here is there's an earnestness to this that worked for me, and I was surprised. I didn't expect it to be. I expected a big bucket of cheese, top to bottom, and it wasn't.
You expected Whitey to take that bucket and ride a good 900 feet or however far he went with a bucket of cheese.
Yep. Yeah.
Yards. Well,
that reminds me. Before I ask this question, I've actually got an early chick in the bucket. I wanted to ask Ibbot, who you know, of this group, probably the least prone to like jump on a Western. Just not
right,
really
right.
Your
least,
genre.
Right. Ooh, a Western on Netflix. Let's watch that. Yeah.
What did you think? Did you come away liking it?
I actually really enjoyed it a lot more than I thought it was going to be. And I think I was thinking it was something like Lightning Jack or.
Same.
Yeah, that's what I was going into this. And so when I start seeing Aborigines fall off cliffs to their death screaming, thinking, oh, this isn't what I thought it was going to be at all.
Right.
Okay.
And to their credit, I thought they handled all of that interaction stuff pretty well in terms of
really did. Yeah.
Cultural sensitivity, knowing who these people really were.
Right.
Like that stuff was great to see.
I think Simon Winsor, the director here, also, and like you said, Australian, had a good history. And good source material had been rewritten over years, according to the trivia. And he kind of pulled it back in because he had a little bit of knowledge about this history. And I think we were kind of, at least for me, during the 90s, was when I first started getting, an understanding of how we had done in America with Native Americans. And then I was starting to see more things in the world. Yeah. I don't know if that was just because that was my age group or sure. if we was becoming more socially conscious.
I'll say right up front, it's very naive of me, but in the 80s and 90s, when I was young and up and coming, I felt like I knew nothing about places like Australia. They just weren't told to us. Yeah. We didn't know. Mm-hmm. Like Paul Hogan is like the only connection we had, and he's just a giant stereotype. So when that's all you have, that's all you have. These days, you know, Australia's, I don't know, the world's just smaller now. We all know everybody. Yeah. We're way more connected. And some people are very threatened by that kind of exposure, but I love it. I love not being, you know, in the dark about what a whole other country is doing. It turns out Australia is pretty cool. They have uniqueness, but they're a lot like us. And, you know, like half our actors in Hollywood who are the biggest draws are Australian, and it's just a different time. But back then, yeah, I remember thinking, well, is that even really a place? Like,
right.
It's like a myth.
That's not real.
Yeah. Like giant dingoes.
Can I layer a trope into all this?
Yeah, of course. Right here.
Sure. I don't know. Bedouin Rescue Service.
Yes. Is the name of the trope.
That would be when you, the white savior, or you, the upper class, are trapped and going to die, and the people of the woods come out at night and they find your dying body and they rescue you.
Yeah.
And like it goes back. This is not the first thing. Like, in fact, I would say the Jawas in Star Wars
are an example. Yeah, they are. Yeah. Lord of the Rings, the freaking elves showing up at that battle, whatever in Two Towers. That's that as well.
And I think this is a point in time we were getting away from the idea of white savior and almost kind of like making fun of it, but still kind of holding on to it somewhat. So I wouldn't say this is, I don't feel like Matthew Quigley was just showing up.
I agree. It's a broad covering statement. I actually think this movie is not very much of an offender.
It's aware.
We get movies like The Last Samurai later in life, and you want to talk about a white savior,
set in the distant past.
Right, right.
And that's
right.
The thing. Yes, like if you want a lot more like equality and interest of story, you need to make this movie about the Aboriginals.
Yeah.
But like that's something you can do now. In 1990, setting a movie in 1860, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like these people are just, this is how they're going to tell the story.
All right.
Right.
And like that's.
Movie's like the most egregious in this way? If I'm saying Last Samurai is the most like,
that's pretty.
Here comes
that's
the
pretty
white
rough
guy
one.
To save everybody. I freaking hate that. Ugh. That movie's so cool. Like, there's so much to like about that movie, but when you look at it, you're like, why does this have to be Tom Cruise?
Oh, yeah, right. And you know it is. It's we've talked about it before on the show, and part of it has to do with. You know, the markets you're selling to. Now that we're getting into a market, a bigger world market where Hollywood is making films, they make way more money outside the U.S. than they do in the U.S. We're seeing that not be the same as it was.
Yeah.
Because we're getting a lot of funding from, you know, China for making these films. Before, you know, most of the funding came from,
Well, even if the funding doesn't come from there, often we'll still premiere something there because the market's bigger and we know we're going to get more ticket sales.
Right. Yeah. So we're seeing a better diversity because there's more players on the field involved than other in the money. The money is the most influential thing. It's not the most important part, but it's the most influential thing. If I am a movie producer or someone who's invested into a film, you're going to want to have somebody that has large drawing star power for your audience.
Right.
And in that case, Tom Cruise was a bankable, you know, a bankable person. You could bank.
Oh, of course.
That.
Yeah. And you're not wrong, but also the story it's based on is very much the thing that it is. So it's, you know, it goes back further than just the film, but also Westerns in particular, that's the template we're looking at here. And that template has always been this. It's brave white guy with a huge stash venturing west and staking his
always
claim
west, even in Australia. Yeah. West.
It's just like there's no one movie that's as bad as our concept of all these movies, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, like, even Dances with Wolves, which was really highly favored at the time, fell out of favor later. Like, even Dances with Wolves doesn't portray the main character as a white savior. He's actually kind of bumbling, and he fails over and over, right all the way to the end of the movie. That guy is failing to help anybody, you know?
Right.
I love that movie. I will go on record, by the way, as saying I still love Dances with Wolves. Never fell out of favor with me.
There's a sensibility to it.
Yeah.
There's this other trope that we always have in mind called the magical aboriginal, right? The idea that besides being a rescue service in the middle of the night when you're dying in the desert, they also have some special powers that, you know, back in the past you were like, but that actually doesn't really come up that much. You know, you rarely see that trope.
Yeah.
It's not in Dances with Wolves. They're all just regular people. Mm. It's not in this movie. I was expecting the whole movie for the Aboriginals to pull out some magic.
Special power to all of a sudden appear in single file line wrapping around the bad guys.
So I was trying to figure that point of the story out because they didn't go to a call to action until the manservant. Was he the leader and he had been forced? And so they couldn't organize a revolt until he was released.
It did feel like that, right?
Because when he went back
stoically, took his clothes off and said, baby, back to shirtless dude. I'm on my way. And then left. And then when they showed up again, he's kind of in front. That was my takeaway too, that, their leader has been, they were kind of rendered a little bit without a structure because their hierarchy was broken up by them getting this dude taken by what's his name. And you know what? That guy could have saved a lot of people a lot of trouble though. If he wouldn't have come in there and bonked him on the thing, our shootout was over in the next 15 minutes and this movie was over.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. It's kind of his fault.
Yeah. And I didn't understand what his motivation for that was. It's like, here's a way out.
Right.
But my devotion to Marsden was just so strong that I had to take out this guy who might have been my savior.
Right.
For me, it was the comparison.
That's also, I just want to say there's also a named trope for that in TV tropes.
Yeah.
WTF.
It's called My Master Right or Wrong is the name of the trope.
Okay. Interesting.
Oh, interesting.
There are plenty of those examples throughout film.
The one that jumps out to me, I was going to mention, is Samuel L. Jackson in Django.
There was that whole scene reminded me of the Leonardo DiCaprio dinner in Django Unchained.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. And never really knowing if, like, that's actually a really brilliant role that Sam Jackson played because you never really know quite how he feels. You think that he's devoted to the master and the plan and the whatever, but there's something in there too where you're like, he probably knows better. That's a complicated thing to do. Really good.
My favorite example of my master right or wrong is Quintus in Gladiator.
Okay.
So this is like the leader of the Praetorian Guard. Right. He gets some lines early in the movie.
Yeah.
Right. And Caesar, orders him to kill Maximus and his whole family.
Uh-huh.
And he says, "I'm a soldier. I obey." And it's like, "You're his best friend." Yeah. But no, that's how this trope works.
Yeah. There's Quintus. I'm looking at a picture. I forgot about that dude. He is great. Dude, I want to watch Gladiator about every other week. What's my deal?
So would Reek follow in that same vein there from Game of Thrones?
No, Reek was, yes. Okay.
He was so abused.
If they cut your wiener off, right? If someone comes and cuts your wiener off, you're enslaved forcefully. You're brainwashed. You're ruined.
Right.
Maybe that's part of this. Like, you get a little bit broken before you can.
Thank you for reminding me of that scene in the second to last season where he finally gets a chance to redeem himself and he just jumps right off the boat.
Yeah. F it. You've already taken it. What else could they take? I don't know. I'm out.
Yeah.
Man, that show was great until it wasn't.
Until it wasn't. Yeah. Exactly.
It may have been jumping the rail on the boat right there that where it stops being any good.
I feel like that to jump the shark is jumping the rail.
Jumping the rail, yeah. I wonder, at some point someone's going to do a tell-all or there's going to be a book or something. I want to know what happened in the end with production. I want to know if they just said, ugh, everybody's so busy and also sick of this. We've been at this for 10 years. Maybe we just need to wrap it up. Let's hurry up.
I mean, we watched what kind of happened. I mean, we kind of know that it was, you know, they didn't have the material anymore. I mean, because Martin is a great character writer, and trying to translate that into the later story stuff where they were kind of making up stuff.
Yeah.
It is hard to carry those characters around, especially when actors are so, because Martin didn't care. He wasn't paying actors. He was just like, okay, this character dies because it's time. And it serves the story. Yeah,
that's his hack, right? George R. R. Martin figured out how to hack fantasy.
Yeah.
And that is make great characters. That's all you have to do is just, he's really good at it. And so what do you do when you have too many characters? You just kill them off. Whatever. Yeah. It doesn't matter. Kill them off, you get to make more. And that like could have gone on forever, but a TV series has to end. You know, and like you have to write a story. You know?
And they were beyond the material at that point, and they were trying to write like Martin, and you know, you can't.
Well, I mean, he was involved, so the way I look at it is, it wasn't about the writing. They were just trying to compress everything into six episodes. Like, you can't do that. Like, for a show,
but I mean, up until the last like season or so, I mean, they were killing people off left and right. I mean, it's just like, who's dying this week? And then like the last couple of seasons, it was like, okay, we've kind of moved beyond the book. We can't really introduce.
But remember,
new characters.
The last two seasons were six episodes each, basically being an entire season of what a previous season would be at 12 episodes, and then they just crammed every little story point to a resolution in this too short of a time for a show that was known for stretching stuff out like paper.
Like, you didn't even kill all the dragons, and it's like, if you had asked me in like season four, at the end of this. You know, there's going to be people dead who are guaranteed to all die. I would have said the dragons, they have to. Yeah. There's no way this world that's been without them for 1,000 years now suddenly has them in plenty. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
But no, they couldn't kill off all the dragons. Dragons are like dingoes. And dingoes will attack you in the middle of the night.
Good job.
Yeah, well done. Jeez, that was nice levels of trauma. Yeah. Those dingoes was the dingo ate your baby thing already a thing? Was that a
Seinfeld
joke?
Would have been just a little bit a few years later.
Yeah, but they were referencing something.
Yeah, but that phrase came from an earlier movie.
What's her name?
From the '80s. Yeah, so I think the dingo ate your baby thing was much earlier. Yeah.
That was what's her name?
A Cry in the Dark. Meryl Streep.
Meryl Streep.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Let me see here. What I got to find this because now I'm.
But we didn't. I wasn't aware of it until Elaine said it, and then I was like, oh, what does that mean?
I can't find Meryl Streep to save my life. How is that possible? Oh my gosh. Okay, there.
I can't find Meryl Streep to save my life.
Yeah, Evil Angels, also known as A Cry in the Dark, Chamberlain is played by Meryl Streep, exclaims, "The dingo's got my baby."
That's what it was. And then
but
Seinfeld
it's based
made
on
it famous.
A 1980 actual case where, you know, the
dingo's
was
ate the baby?
On, yeah, basically it was the.
They put the trying the mother for murder in real life and said, yeah, she killed her kid, and they couldn't find any other evidence, and it turned out in the end it was a dingo that stole the baby and ate him.
Well, MASH had already ruined the crazy Cora scene where she said she smothered her baby.
Yeah, that's like, another thing.
MASH,
another
your thing chicken. Chicken choking.
That's what I'm saying is all of this stuff to do with the baby, the dingo, and the mouth covering, I felt like I was watching other stuff.
Yeah, it felt so used for us at that point. Yeah. Absolutely.
Maybe in 90 I wouldn't have been so weird, but
at the same time I just want to say it was very earnest. Like there was not there was nothing tongue-in-cheek about this portrayal of this broken woman who was thrown out of her country by her ex-husband because she couldn't protect their baby from Indians, I guess. Right, Comanches.
Well, that's that, and they weren't even doing anything, they were just drunk, so she just lost her mind.
That like I say, when you first meet her, you're like, oh no, bad comedy. No, this is real serious. Like this woman is broken, and she's portrayed that way.
Yeah,
and it's really because of Laura San Giacomo selling that character so well. Mm-hmm. That you know, in a different actress's hands, that might not have been done so well. It might have come across as melodramatic or comedy or slapstick or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's because she's not a blonde bombshell, and I was just so glad. Like, oh man, can you imagine how hard this would have been to watch if she was just randomly this gorgeous Hollywood type?
There was something about her that lended to that realism, but also her her transform. She transformed, because in the beginning I was like, ugh, I was like you. I was like, she's going to annoy me this whole movie. And then there were moments of funny. And then the Roy thing kind of got funny, but then you found out what the Roy thing's really about, and it's like, oh, that's dark.
Yeah.
And then she's funny again, and she's also strong again. Like, he was like, well, what about last night? And she's like, what about last night? And she just seemed really tough and awesome then. And
yeah.
She was just all over the place.
She wasn't a damsel in distress, which I was afraid she was going to be. She was a damsel in a mess, and she did she did some really interesting things.
I like
that's
that.
What she did there.
A damsel in a mess. That's good. Someone write that down. Get IMDb on the phone. We got a new category for you there, guys.
Exactly. TV tropes. Let's add it.
It was real good. I found nothing to be very gross, so I didn't do a gross moment. It all was fine.
The only thing I found gross was when Tom Selleck dipped his face in that water out near the house after the big battle. Oh, I don't know. That water has kind of freaked me out for some reason.
Oh, I was thinking another water thing, sucking the water out of the ground through bamboo.
Oh,
I'd do that.
I mean, it's gross only because, you know, that's what they did or do to survive out there.
Well, plus, they're all lipping on it, and I don't know if I want people.
They're all lipping on it.
I'm not into lipping on everyone else's drinks. You know,
I have my own bamboo, please. Yeah.
No, thanks. No, thank you. No.
Grubworms didn't bother you at all.
No, I knew that was all fake.
Man, the real grubworms, the plates they were showing, that was pretty gross. But then when they were eating, I'm like, what is that big old jet puffed looking Cheeto looking thing? That's not what was on the plate.
Yeah, right.
Exactly.
They also looked huge. I guess they were real on the plate. So those are enormous. My gosh.
Yeah. Everything in Australia is larger though, right?
Isn't that? I guess so. I wouldn't eat those. I wouldn't have done it.
What about Quigley's Andy Dufresne moment? Did that?
Yeah, I thought about the same thing. That was hilarious.
Wait,
he climbed out a lot cleaner than he should have.
Yeah. Right. Oh, you're right.
Oh,
but that was actually that was pretty accurate though, right? I mean, didn't they used to like you threw out your crap water from in the house into the alley, and then it like it
slowed down into the ocean?
Rolled out to the ocean. Yeah, that was kind of
pretty
accurate.
Much. Yeah, I was asking somebody the other day, if I was on an island on the ocean, where would you poop? And
right.
It was on TMS or something, and somebody said, well, in the ocean, duh. That's what people did.
In the most abundant place possible,
yeah.
Duh.
Yeah, they had a salt treatment plant known as the ocean.
Till you have to swim in it.
Yeah.
Right.
Right now, all around the world, there are low-lying coral atolls where people poop in the ocean.
That's right.
That's how they... Mm-hmm.
And guess what? Fish poop there all the time. You've never been in the ocean where you weren't surrounded by poop. It's always been true.
Yeah,
I mean, are we so much better?
Poop than water, actually.
Yeah. Right? Are we any better? We poop in a bowl. I mean,
yeah.
Come on.
But then it goes somewhere magical.
You put it that way.
Yeah, and it goes somewhere magical, and we don't have to think about it anymore. That's the great thing about modern society.
And then I hit this little handle, and it all goes away.
It's just magical. No one has to ever deal with it again, except
the magic bowl.
Except you do. I thought the music was a little overwrought in this film. Just a little on the,
Are we on that now? Are we talking about that?
Let's talk about the music. A little bit. I mean, I'll give you my grade early. It's an ALM for a little much. That's my grade.
Mm.
So you always have to put it in its time frame, right? And so, like, this is a movie that's coming out after Basil Poledouris has done a bunch of other similar things. He's just done the submarine movie. What is it? Hunt for Red October.
Oh, yeah.
Dances with Wolves has come out, right? And that score is just incredible.
Did he do that score too? Was that him?
No.
Oh. No, it's just already out.
Oh, I guess what you're saying. It's like a very similar vibe, yeah, for sure.
But Basil Poledouris did score Lonesome Dove, which you mentioned earlier.
Oh, yeah. Lonesome Dove's awesome.
Like, anyway, I'm coming into this film like, wow, how is he going to differentiate this from everything else? And what he does is he doesn't really try too hard. Like, it's kind of like old westerns, you know, like there's a bunch of little things that he pulls from all kinds of movies that you've seen over the years. And I found it really nice. Like, he came up with an original theme, and it's not overwrought. I felt like the theme was kind of subtle.
Mm-hmm.
And you need a Western to have this. Tombstone, of course, is my gold standard.
Right.
But that actually comes years after this, like 3 years after this.
Man, he could have easily just like said, you know what we're going to do? We're in Australia. We're going to lean heavy into the didgeridoo.
Yeah.
And we could have had a whole 2 hours of didgeridoo.
well.
Yeah,
right. Yeah. Didgeridoos cool. I like them.
Think your lucky stars.
They add. I don't want a whole movie of them, but they add a real undertone to things when you play them.
They do, and you can't do an Australian movie without them.
Yeah.
Except in this case, I guess.
But well, they did a couple of times when he was getting pulled around
after he got beat up and left for dead. They played a bit when guy was blowing on.
Gotcha. Them. But you wouldn't want an Australian movie without them.
Right.
Right.
It's required by law.
I need to know where I'm at in the world. Right. Give me an Irish gig or jig or something. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if you guys knew this. This was supposed to be Steve McQueen's last film after The Hunter in 1980. So he was going to go all 10 years later. He was going to do this, but he got sick.
No. The movie was written in 79.
Oh, that's what it was. It was still going to be his next movie, right? At the time.
Right.
Yeah. Didn't happen. Got scrapped. And then got revived in the 80s, as you mentioned before, with Harrison Ford in the lead role, blah, blah, blah. And then, although this one says Harrison Ford turned it down because he considered it too visibly similar to Indiana Jones. Get your trivia straight, people.
Weird.
Then Selleck got it. He had to turn it down because of his commitment to PI, which started in 80. When the series concluded in 88, he quickly asked for the role and to see if it was available again. Then he accepted it. Is that how it works? He'd just go, okay, I'm done with Magnum PI. Can I do your Western? I don't know how that works, but yeah. Steve, I'm just trying to
imagine. Can I drive a Ferrari?
I guess I could see a 1980 era Steve McQueen in the role.
Yeah,
but I kind of would want to see, like, if he had lived.
It would have been a lot.
Yeah,
I think it would have been a lot grittier. Yeah. I mean,
well, had McQueen lived longer, it would have been kind of fun to see him in 90. You know, kind of old, grizzly.
Yeah, really. Yeah,
thing. A little bit.
The conceit of the best sharpshooter in the world, like his marksman skills are unparalleled. That kind of requires that you be a little younger.
Yeah.
Right. You need Even in this movie, with what made it to the final cut, there were some scenes where he's about to shoot that rifle and it's kind of moving around.
Yeah.
Right. Right. What was the lifespan during the 1860s with a sharpshooter from, Wyoming? I'm pretty sure that the age he's at in this movie would have probably been at the end.
Oh, yeah. We were, like 40 was average?
Reaching his golden years.
Yeah. Right.
I'm pretty sure 40 was average around this time, lifespan. So he was pushing he was getting near the end. But okay, you brought up something I almost forgot to address. Okay, you get hired somehow through telegram or, slow mail or something from all the way from Australia. Oh, they're looking for a sharpshooter down in Australia. So you're going to go all the way down there. And then within the process of your bucket demonstration and dinner, you're already in a huge fight and you're done. You've gone in complete opposition of the guy who just hired you. Now, I don't understand what was said that set him off, because what he said was he's at dinner and he made some comment about the Aboriginal something. It was obviously kind of a racist, shitty thing to say. And then there's a little bit of a stone face on Selleck's face. And then all shit breaks loose.
Well,
what happened?
It wasn't the ad was advertised as a sharpshooter for killing dingoes. But once he realized that he wasn't going to be shooting dingoes, he was going to be shooting Aboriginals. And he'd already been through this,
Indians in America. I missed that. I totally missed that.
Quigley even says one of the first things he says at that dinner is, you don't need me to shoot dingoes.
Right. And
you've got this whole troop of boys that you're clearly sleeping in a big bed with. What am I doing here? And so then from that moment onward, the only things Marston's talking about are the Aboriginals. And it dawns on Quigley that that's what he's there to kill.
Okay. Okay. Gotcha. Now I get it. I mean, I kind of got it, but it wasn't super clear to me. And then I thought,
no,
man, this movie's getting right to it. We're getting right to the meat and potatoes here. We're just going to fight.
Yeah.
And then they drug that out for a while. So that's fine.
They did. I thought it was interesting, though, because, I mean, there was a lot of things in this movie that make you feel like that. You're like, oh, wow. I mean, if a director or a story that's written can make you just for a second stop and go, oh, what would I do?
Yeah.
That's good. Mm-hmm. That's good interactive storytelling.
I agree. There was a bullet in the bucket.
Grab a bucket.
It's he got shot at one point and then hit the dirt, and then the foot came and stood on his gun, and that was kind of the, take us to the next thing where he's captured.
Right.
Boy, that bullet must have not have done anything because he just never, never.
Are you talking about after the shootout at the
shootout before the final thing with Marsden?
Yeah. Right.
Like when he's in the mountains.
Right.
When the kid shoots him. What's his face? But then they show he's bleeding when the British.
Yeah. Well, they show his hand hurting and he's got a
I guess he had blood
down
his bloody chaps. Chaps, dude. Freaking chaps. I would never wear chaps. I couldn't do it. I guess if I was a cowboy, you would, because that's why you do it. But
it was interesting because this movie opened up with him stuffing steel into leather. It was a bunch of it's all the steel he had. He was putting into leather things. Sure.
Yeah. Bullets into straps, the gun into the big leather holder. That's all he had. He just had leather and steel. And
he was
protect
but
the
leather
steel by putting it to the leather.
Right.
It was kind of a Rambo montage.
Yeah, a little bit.
Right up top.
A little bit.
Kind of was,
but it also kind of had Indiana Jones quality of like, here's a map, and we're about to fly over the map, like that old Hollywood.
Does anybody drag their finger across a map like that, though?
No.
Yes, I do.
So, that's so asinine. That's slow. It's like.
I spin the globe, and then I just. Bat my finger right onto it to stop it.
I will say that I've seen that so many times in movies. I was disappointed when he didn't double tap his finger down on the end point. He just he just drug his finger and he left it there.
Oh, right. You mean like this is where it is. Tap twice.
You're supposed to tap it to show, that's where I'm going.
Location.
That's awesome. All right. Well, let's do. I have clips. Unless you guys have anything else. You guys have anything else?
Just the point. Would the world be a better place if everybody had a gun that took 2 minutes to load one bullet?
Yeah, right. It would.
Yeah.
That's why. Bearing arms made a little more sense back then. I mean, well, I'm getting emails about this, but they didn't used to be semi-automatic weapons. They were these things you had to like pull a bullet out, stick it into the thing, put it in the deal.
Like the power and majesty of the Colt pistols of the time frame were that you could run around with six shots and you would take them very slowly. You wouldn't just hand the hammer with that gun because it was very powerful. It would shoot very straight, you know?
Yeah.
So like there were just some stormtrooper moments in this movie.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
I did like the fact that it's a realistic portrayal of ammunition. Conservative, because you got to conserve your ammunition because it's not unlimited.
I also liked
unlike the Predator.
I like how that gun put people down in a way that was really theatric, like it would really pound them back.
Man, the kick on that bullet was like
that was great.
It seems believable because that is a big freaking bullet.
Yeah.
And that would knock you back into a wall or fling you off a mountaintop or whatever.
Mythbusters trying to put that to bed, right?
Yeah, like a little bit.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. It's never quite like that, but it's still fun to.
It's the size of the wad and how it exits the body, right? I mean, that's going to be the biggest factor at how much the impact.
Sure.
Is that a phrase, the size of the wad?
I just said it, didn't I?
The size of the size of your wad is how much gunpowder you have behind a bullet, but like it's just funny because like I wouldn't have enjoyed this movie as much if every time he shot somebody they realistically crumpled straight down.
Yeah,
no,
Owie. In any Western you want them to fly backwards unless they're on a balcony, in which case they fall forwards.
They got it. Yeah, you got to
break part of the balcony off with them. Yeah,
which
reminds me, and I know we're supposed to be getting to quotes, but I rewatched Three Amigos the other day, guys.
That movie's great.
It holds up so well.
I love Three Amigos. Are you kidding me? Mm-hmm. I could watch that right now. Goodbye, everyone. I'm watching that movie. All right,
watch a plethora of movies. The only other note I had in my notes that. I can't remember if we talked about just the National Geographic nudity.
Oh, no, not really.
Oh, yeah.
There was a lot of it. More than
lots of ween, lots of boobs.
Yep. Oops. Plenty of ween. Yeah. More ween than I'd hoped for.
How much do you hope for?
It's zero.
I'm always kind of torn with that. In 1990s, I don't know how many true tribes would have been left. They could have represented this. So these were probably modern actors and actresses portraying tribes. I wasn't sure about that.
Well, there were definitely Aboriginal folk, whether or not they were, I don't know.
If that's the one that was filmed, right.
If you look at the credits, there are just dozens of Aboriginals who are credited, and they all have you know, their Aboriginal names. It's all a huge long list.
Right.
It looks like the way, you know, the way you make a movie like this in 1990 is you have someone who is a go-between that goes and offers to pay him some real money to come stand around and do some acting.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like you
line up on this mountaintop. Yeah, and
the movie didn't need but one of them, maybe two of them, to actually do solid acting, to be actually good.
Yeah. Right.
It's the house guy and the girl, maybe.
Right. Have you done any stunt work? We're going to set up a big inflatable at the bottom of this cliff.
I want to say one more thing about the stunt work. I didn't go back and look, but I could swear Tom Selleck was doing most of his horse stunt riding, and some of that stuff was pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Like coming down hills and stuff. That can be very.
It didn't feel old. It was nicely filmed. Yeah, cinematography was nice. Color was nice. Like that movie looked good. That's the other thing.
Yeah, that sliding down a hill. That, you know, that horse didn't look happy to do it.
Right.
And
you're gonna need to put a warning at the end of this movie.
That could go really wrong really quick.
Yeah.
Right.
Maybe that you actually have a point, Dunaway. Maybe that's why they made such a big deal about no one was hurt.
Right. So, yeah.
No, he's fine. It's fine. Yeah. We didn't shoot the dingoes. I know it looks like
smiling.
It.
He's
playing.
Yeah. Yeah. You just can't tell the horse is smiling. It's doing its job. the horse off the cliff, I think, was fake. But other than that,
That looked good, though. That guy getting yanked off there.
They actually threw Tom Selleck off a cliff. That was not a horse. It was actually Tom Selleck just doing his best horse impression.
You notice they didn't say there were no Tom Sellecks hurt or killed.
No, they didn't say that. No, they did not.
No, why would you? That's legally not true. All right.
There was an article I read that went into how important it was to the filmmakers to let people know that the horses were trained to fall like that and to scream. Like horse screaming is apparently something to teach them to do. But like, it just, I don't know. It's just like, it's such a product of the time. Cause I remember that time. I remember when suddenly it seemed like PETA was a force, you know, and they really hadn't done much before. And the 1990s sounds like the right time for that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's about correct. All right, let's do some clips. I got clips, man. Look at these here. Hold on. I got to make sure I really have them. I do. Here's one that we'll start with. This is something about the wagon.
I don't reckon the lady's all that anxious to get in your wagon, mister.
Well, oh, okay. Well, don't get in the wagon then, I'd say, right there.
Well, call TC or somebody, I mean.
Yeah. Here's some more some Roy business.
Don't worry, Roy. Everything's going to turn out just fine.
Ugh. See, that's when I thought I was going to be annoyed. But.
That was a dread moment right there. Like, oh, geez, is this going to go on for the entire film?
Yeah, is she always going to be here? But then she was great. Vamping army dude.
Well, you just do your job and stay out of trouble. In our experience, Americans are uncouth misfits who've been run out of their own barbaric country.
Barbaric.
Cut about that guy.
Yeah,
speaking of facial hair,
let's
go on safari.
Right? Yeah.
His lamb chops.
Definitely Chekhov's soldier. As soon as I saw him, I'm like, oh, we'll see him again before
he'll end. Show up again. Mm-hmm. And he'll literally sandwich this movie. He'll be your bread.
Right.
Yeah. Spitting Rickman. He just spit really loud at one point, so I captured it. This is him spitting. Man.
Wow.
That goes back to the idea that he doesn't even know how to spit, right? So he's just playing the part.
Yep.
That's like a hair in your sandwich kind of spit.
Right.
Yep. I agree. I mean, he was just
like a hair in your blood pudding.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't care how much of the sandwich you lose that's in your mouth. You're just, the whole bite is sacrificed.
By the way, as somebody who's never smoked a cigar, maybe you guys can help me with this. When you bite off the end and spit it, why do we do that? What's the point? Why can't you just...
Because that's the end you're going to light.
Okay.
Or isn't it? It's the end you're going to light, so you need the tobacco exposed.
Okay. Right.
So you have little bits of tobacco, right? It's been shredded.
Yeah.
That's the inside.
Yeah.
But it's wrapped by a waxy tobacco leaf to hold it all together, and that's kind of stiff. Mm. And you can't suck air through that leaf wrapping. You have to cut it. You have to make a hole in the end, and you would usually just use a knife.
These days, you use one of those little guillotines. Those little
The little snipper
these
things.
Just
okay.
go get our cigar Swisher guillotines. Sweet and shut them
up. Okay, but right. but do you have to do it to both ends? Because both ends need to be exposed. Or?
No, you only need to do it to the end that you're going to put in your mouth.
Right, because you light the other end. Which
oh, because the other end burns. Okay,
right.
The other end
right.
burns the whole. That's what it is. Yeah, I had it backwards.
Okay,
I've actually smoked a cigar before. I've smoked a few.
I've never smoked a single cigar in my life. Well, I had a little. I had a lot of secondhand at Nerdtacular. I can tell you that.
My right.
I got contact high from whatever you get out of tobacco. But
smoking here, anything in Snowbird is like double smoke.
Yeah, because you're up in you're up in the thin air and it's clean air and now it's not. All right. Hey, check out these laughs. They're pretty dumb. All right. So there's some of that. That's pretty good.
Pretty bad.
Here's some good advice in general.
I ain't sharing my bed till I'm certain you know who's in it.
You really should know who's in it before you get in there.
Well, and I mean, your partner should know who you are is really what he's trying to say there.
That's a good point.
You don't do crazy.
Right. Don't do crazy.
I don't know. I had a hard time following this part. Like that man is going to be all up in that woman. Like the first chance he gets.
Wow.
I don't get this.
See,
I don't
believe that because
he's honorable Quigley.
Yeah, I think Quigley has been down under before. I think he's a little older and experienced. I think he knows you don't diddle crazy. You don't stick your diddle. Yeah. You don't stick your
Quigley. You don't get all up in that woman if she's crazy.
I'm just saying, like they're out in the desert, they're gonna die. No, there's. I'm sorry.
This is. I don't know, man. Yeah, it's, but you're like a lot of sweaty, like, smellies.
You're a poop covered corpse out there. That's gross.
Right. I can wait.
This is why I'm portraying Marston as 100% homosexual because I don't understand how he lets her go.
Oh,
how does
see.
He let her leave his ranch?
I see. Yeah, yeah. He kept a lot of. He sure kept a lot of strapping young men around. I can tell you that.
Yeah. Strapping.
We've uncovered.
Is that where that comes from?
Secret.
Strapping because there's. What are they strapping exactly? What are they strapping? What is that?
Strapping on?
I don't. Yeah. No, no.
No, I meant like gear.
I know. I'm kidding.
Strapping young men or origin. You ready? Here we go. We're origins.
Give it.
What is the origin? Apparently, evolution follows. Strap, noun, verb to beat with a strap. Strap, strap away. Strapping. Active, vigorous. Strong, big, and robust, in the modern sense of either sex or mostly males. So a strapping young man is like a big, strong man.
But under your thumb, possibly, because he's under the strap? Is that
Oh, I think it's because he's wearing idea? Straps, and the straps are all tight because he's muscular.
The straps are tight.
I don't know.
Look at
hey, I got an email 2 days ago. I got this email from somebody claiming to be Brian Ibbett's mom. And I don't have any reason to say it's not her. So I'm just going to play this and we'll assume it's your mom. Okay. So she sent this clip. This is apparently from Brian Ibbett. We've never heard this before, but from your prom night, I guess. And you asked this question and we have audio proof. So you asked your date this. It seemed a little forward to me, but here's what you said.
How's about you and me taking off all our clothes and going swimming?
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds like something you'd say, right?
Yeah, she wasn't into it.
She's not into it.
Yeah.
Well, that answers your question, in a way.
We both spent a lot on our, my tux and her gown and all that stuff. I understood.
Yeah, you got it in the end. I understand. Mm-hmm. Dunaway, it kind of goes to your point. Like if they would have gotten in the lake, they could have washed half of the crust off and they would have been at least in somewhat suitable position to get it on.
I want to say I'm a typical American. I'm always like, oh, have you had a bath yet? You really need to take a bath before we, do something.
This is really fun information about you that I'm glad I'm here.
I'm just saying I like it clean.
Yeah, you like
you
it
may
clean.
May like it dirty. I like it clean.
Yeah. Yeah. I think
you know,
that's great.
I mean, I'm certainly not saying, oh, just finished a workout. Let's go do it. But,
right.
I don't know. After a long day, I'm not going to say, yeah, could you go shower before we do anything?
Right. Like I said, I'm probably the weirdo. I always, but I'm just saying.
That's all right.
Listen. I used to take 2 showers a day.
No shame. Oh, really? That's cool. I should do that.
You shouldn't do it. You shouldn't do it. It's terrible for your skin.
Is it bad for your skin?
And your water bill.
Oh, that's true.
That's true. Like a trope, though. Like, we're making a PG-13 movie here.
Yeah.
So we're going to admit that people have sex and they want to have sex. We're just going to make sure that they have it right after the end of the movie.
Yeah.
But movie's going to end. Yeah, right. And we're going to be telling you, the viewer, they had sex.
Yeah. And they lived happily ever after they had sex.
Yeah. They should say with big white letters, and then they had sex, comma, no animals were hurt or killed in the making of this movie.
Except during the sex.
Yeah, except during the sex scene. All right, here's Ben Mendelsohn being all young and stuff.
Think I'll ever get to be as fast as you?
Weird. Weird. No.
That's weird.
You mean if you practice? He's, no, that was like my favorite line of the whole film. You mean if you practice?
He's
no.
my age, so let's see. He played O'Flynn. I'm just trying to see. April 3rd, he's a little older than me by a couple of months is all. So, So he would have been 21. 21 years old.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Crazy.
Nice.
Dingo's going to get you.
You think the dingoes will get you first?
Yeah, probably.
Probably.
Probably the dingoes.
Unless you go nuts on them. Unless you go crazy Cora on them.
Yeah. He was literally telling her that the dingoes are going to get you. And then they kind of did.
Right.
They kind of did. Yeah.
Apparently, if you just kill a couple of dingoes in front of their mates, they'll turn on each other.
Yeah.
Right?
They'll fight over that meat.
Yeah.
Dingoes got to eat.
Exactly. And then they'll be like, oh, well, I guess I'm still. Could you eat more? Yeah, I could eat more. How about the lady?
Dingoes seem like the low hanging fruit variety. You know, they're like, oh, look, here, it's a baby human. Those things are soft and easy to eat. Let's try that. No? Yeah. You shot one of us? All right, let's just eat this guy.
Does anyone ever domesticate other than the long standing, you know, dogs are all domesticated from eventually old prehistoric dogs? But like, are dingoes, does anyone have like a dingo in their house like you'd get a tiger or something? I never hear about that.
You mean like in this group? No. I mean, but you mean like somebody somewhere?
Just some. No, I mean, yeah, like we, like, yeah. I don't know.
We had a blue heeler mix that one vet said was part dingo.
Really?
Right. Yeah.
Did you roll your eyes at him? Whatever.
Yeah, I was young. I was really little. So I was like, oh, right. Wow. Part dingo, dude.
No way. He might eat
dingo.
Me. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's cool.
The breed called Australian cattle dog is related.
Okay. Oh, it's a dingo mix?
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't know.
According to the Daily Beast, take it for what it's worth, although dingoes are rarely kept as companion pets, it is legal in the states of New South Wales and Western Australia to keep a pet dingo without a permit.
So you can keep one. Okay.
According to the Daily Beast.
You could do it.
Yeah. But you might not want to.
But then the dingofoundation.org says don't do that.
Oh, the Dingo Foundation?
I had a friend growing up who had a pet javelina, and they had basically been out hunting and killed a sow that was you know, just recently given birth. So they kept one of the babies, and then it lived in their house. Like, they had a pet javelina. And like, my complaint was always that the pig stank. It was stinky.
Yeah.
Like, you shouldn't want this as a pet because it stank.
Yeah.
Watching this movie brought all that up for me because, like, I don't know why, but every time I saw those dingoes, I was just like, I'll bet that smells real bad.
Oh, yeah. Guys. Everyone I knew who had a domestic pig growing up, and it was maybe three people I ever knew that did, they raised them and had, you know, box trained and everything. They all stunk. Just to high heaven, pigs reek. Yeah. And it's not the muddy pigs at the farm. It's just some furry little pot belly that somebody adopted. And they smell like death. Right. They're horrible.
I think there's a real thing where we have domesticated animals that we could tolerate the smell. Because cats, they bathe themselves and they really don't stink because they don't excrete anything that really stinks too much.
Well, when they do, it's in the other room in a thing of sand and I don't have to think about it, right?
But right, right.
Dogs,
but we all excrete that.
Yeah. Dogs get stinky outside, but I kind of like an outside dog smell. There's something about it. That's like homely. I don't know. I can't explain it. I just like it.
Come here, puppy.
I like cuddling with a dog. Just a dog, and it smells like a dog and smells like comfort.
I like dogs, but dogs have a habit, some dogs anyway. They have a habit of going, hey, is that something dead over there? Let me roll in it.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Or is that also poo? Let me eat it.
Yeah. We specifically domesticated dogs to our liking. So you gotta imagine. Go back in time, dogs
too stinky.
Smell better. So the fact, Scott, is if we just put a lot of effort into it globally, we could have good smelling pigs.
Oh yeah, this the absolutely bottom line. Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've come to the conclusion now. Well done.
Is it the fact that they? Because aren't pigs the only other mammals that sweat externally or sweat out their skin as opposed to out their paws or out their nose or something like that? Is that what makes domesticated pigs smell so bad?
I don't know, man, because I've been around horses sweating and I've seen cows sweating. Sweating seems pretty.
I thought pigs were the only ones. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do pigs
sweat? Because
anything
that's very hairy is not going to sweat much, right?
Let's see. They're also.
I mean, except for Tom Selleck,
not
who
sweaty.
Obviously sweats.
It says,
a lot.
Do pigs sweat?
No, pigs sweat internally.
Ew.
That explains.
That sounds like bullshit.
Yeah.
Oh no, he sweats internally.
Let's see. There are two main different types: excrete sweat glands and apocrine. That's the stuff the pigs have. Oh, so that's what this says. It says apocrine sweat glands release a viscous secretion, which many people think gives these pigs a very bad smell.
Viscous.
So when people say I'm sweating like a pig, they're actually saying I reek. Don't come here.
I sweat internally and release it as toxins in other ways.
The phrase sweat like a pig actually comes from blacksmithing. It's from creating pig iron.
Oh,
But I thought pigs rolled around in mud because they couldn't sweat. I don't know anything. All right.
I don't know anything.
Oh, that's probably it to cool off. Yeah.
Yeah, it keeps them cool. I don't know. Pigs are weird. Don't have them at home. Final
horses, sweat. Monkeys, apes, and hippos sweat. All right.
Yeah, horses definitely sweat.
Horses do. And I've seen a rhino, not a rhino, hippo. You said hippo, right, Ibbet? I think you said one.
Hippos were in the list too. Yeah,
I've seen that sweaty thing at the zoo recently, where it was like dripping. I'm like, there's no water here.
So I wonder, is that like a scientific study? You're like you put a rhino in a warm room and wait for him to sweat. You go up and what do you do? Or is it just like we've observed it and it's just a fact?
You kiss it gently on his horn.
Right. That's sweat.
Yep.
Write that one down. This hippo sweats. Oh.
Yeah, this is the sound of you doing that right after you tasted it. All right. Let's do this. Don't leave me like this, she says.
Quickly.
Oh.
Don't leave me like this.
It's not a she. It's a guy. There.
Yeah.
I like this.
Another point in the movie that made me go, could I do that? Could I, if I was in, if I'm in enough pain to have a conversation.
Yeah.
When I shoot myself?
If you're going to get eaten by dingoes,
yeah,
probably.
Oh, right.
I probably.
But you might not.
Because that's the.
I mean, you got maybe it'd be bullet. A good night.
Maybe decide how you want to use it.
Yeah. Or maybe.
I think he checked out a little early. I might would have given it a couple more minutes. I'm like, it's not even dark yet. I got time.
Yeah, that's what I. That's you know what? That's the right take. You wait until you're sure. You might make it to the next day, and those other guys.
I don't know. You're in pain that whole time.
Yeah, but that's better than. You
how much
survive.
Pain? I mean, you start slipping out and, body starts turning off pain. It's like, nah, I'm good.
Yeah. Shock.
Yeah. Shock. Yeah.
And then if no dingoes come, you might make it. So why shoot yourself?
We're all hanging out by the caves.
Yeah. All right. Here's a little fella saying, what? I don't know what this is.
That little fella was eating like his belly button been rubbing a blister on his backbone.
Oh, that's my favorite little.
What sounds like something we would have said during the 1860s? That's not the this.
Yeah. That's the one.
That's not a little this. Bit too long to be a phrase.
A quip, right? A little smart quip.
Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to start a Western analogy and just see where it goes.
Yeah.
See.
Yeah.
Always thank people for your lizards.
Thanks for the lizards.
Yeah. So there's that.
Yeah.
I know who you are.
I know who you are. You're the American.
Ooh, hello. I'm the son of these American. German immigrants, and I sound nothing like them. I don't know why I have an English accent.
Oh, that hurt my feelings. I haven't cried that hard since Spider-Man died. Like, that was rough.
Wait, what?
Ma.
Who's Spider-Man? No, Spider-Man never died.
Spider-Man died?
When he got snapped. When he got snapped.
Oh,
when he got snapped.
Stark, I don't feel so good.
Yeah.
I don't feel so good. I haven't cried that hard since then. I was like, no, not Ma.
Yeah,
not Klaus's mom.
But then the German guy says this, and I don't understand what he said. Right after that she died, he says this.
Why?
Is he saying why?
That's what I mean.
Why?
Okay, so it is why.
Yeah.
Why?
All right.
Why?
Fair enough. Here's a no, shut up.
Oh, shut up.
It's pretty good.
That was long, boy.
And then we need our Australian listeners to tell us what this final clip says or what it means, because I know what it says. But anyway, here it is.
Move, you gutless bloody wonder.
Wanda. Is
wonder. You gutless bloody wonder. Like a gutless wonder.
You said wonder, not Wanda?
Yeah, wonder.
Let me try that
gutless
again.
Bloody wonder.
Listen to this again. Wonder.
Move, you gutless bloody wonder.
You can actually find the phrase gutless wonder in Wiktionary.
Yeah, that's a common phrase, gutless wonder. And because it's Australian or British, you add a bloody to it.
You're right.
What happens to your your German sausage when you have no guts there?
It rubs it against your belly button and your backbone.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is
then you excrete it through your skin
like a sweaty rhino. Yeah. Like a sweaty pig and rhino.
You sweat combined. Internally.
A pig rhino, a rhine pig. All right, time to move past these and dive directly into the checklist. It's the Film Sack Checklist. To start us off, an important point we haven't brought up, but really big hat on Quigley. Check. That thing was huge.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Wasn't quite 10 gallons. It was like about 8.
Yeah, it was about 8.
Yeah, the mustache gallons. Made it look smaller, though.
Yeah.
Maybe that's it.
Had some sweet sweat stains around the rim, too. That was pretty good. Yeah. Really big mustache. Check. And finally, no close-range combat allowed. Check. The Star Trek connections. Randy, did you find any in this?
Yes, I did. Mm. Not any actors. Oh, that's just, this is just a film in a bottle way off in Australia, right?
Yeah.
But let me tell you about... let me tell you about all of the second lieutenants of the music of Quigley Down Under. Now, Basil Poledouris was the composer, right? And that he doesn't appear in Star Trek. But there were four people who were credited in the music section of this film. Their names were Mark McKenzie, Tom Boyd, James Thatcher, and Emil Richards. And they are all over the Star Trek properties of, like, the 15 years before and after Quigley. Like, these guys composed or orchestrated music for Star Trek The Motion Picture, Deep Space Nine, Voyager, Enterprise, First Contact, Insurrection, Nemesis. Like, it's just these guys, I guess they're like a crew. Like, maybe the studio has, like, people who do orchestration and like, work in-house.
Yeah.
And I guess this what was Star Trek Paramount? I don't. Anyway,
Paramount. Yes, Paramount. Right.
But anyway, Mark McKenzie, Tom Boyd, James Thatcher, Emil Richards, like, were involved in everything Star Trek musically for 25 years.
Yeah. No, that's cool. Well, then we have.
And they worked for Basil Poledouris on this movie.
Those are fine connections, I think. Let's get to that Twitter post we mentioned last time. We always do it. It's where you guys sum it up 280 characters or less. I think we should break with tradition this time and really do something weird and start with Randy.
Quigley Down Under. In a house with about a dozen men, everyone waits outside while two of them have an intimate dinner together before one man tosses the other man, just like a Saturday Night at Ibiza.
I didn't see that one coming for once. That's crazy.
Oh, really? I was ready for it, and I still enjoyed it tremendously.
Yeah, it was still very good. All right, Brian Dunaway, your turn.
Quigley Down Under. Before you make love to me, you have to say two words. You mean kangaroo shit? Or like a gun butt to the scrote. I can wait.
That's a lot more than two words, gun butt to the scrote. It's a lot.
Kangaroo shit was my two words.
Oh, there you go. All right.
Or like a guy. Did I break up? Maybe I broke up.
Breaking up is hard to do, is what I've heard. finally, Brian Ebbett.
Quigley Down Under, a sharpshooter Western whose two biggest stars led TV shows called Magnum and Just Shoot Me.
Oh, my gosh. Weird.
Good job.
Nicely done. Oh, shoot. I've screwed up my alternate titles. I should have used yours.
Oh, that's all right.
Instead, I call them The Long Shot or Sniper PI. That's terrible. That's terrible. Nice. What was I thinking? All right. We got an email from a listener I'm going to read today. We do emails every week. They come to us at filmsack@gmail.com. This is from somebody named Phil. He says he's our friend, Phil. So,
nice of him. Phil.
He does say in parentheses.
I'd like verification, though.
He says the P is like a pneumatic tube spelling. So it's actually nil. Anyway. Doesn't matter. Hello, Film Sack. He says, the episode about The Shadow brought up a couple of things I must share. Number one, Scorpion's knife hooks that come out of his hand in the Mortal Kombat 1995 movie had his knives come to life like they were snakes as well. I don't remember that.
That's what I'm thinking of, probably.
Yeah, probably when you brought that up, that was what you meant. Number two, I still have never seen The Shadow. I was supposed to see it with a group of four friends at a birthday party at the age of 14. Although we had our tickets for The Shadow, we instead snuck into the theater playing a little movie called Speed, and it was awesome.
Ooh.
I thought we were, I can't believe those movies are peers. How is this possible?
And you made the right choice.
Right. How lucky.
100% yeah. You did. He says he was sure they were going to jail. It added to the suspense of the movie, feeling like any minute we were going to get arrested. The theater was packed. So how a group of 14-year-olds is able to find five seats together in a crowded theater without raising suspicion with the wrong tickets is still amazing. It sounds like a risk, or the risk was worth the reward. Then he goes on to say, number three, I live outside of Vancouver where we have a dollar store chain called Dollarama. They have recently been selling DC and Marvel trade paperbacks and graphic novels for $4 Canadian. That's approximately $3 your dollars. Some are actually hardcover and brand new and shrink-wrapped. This has been incredible. I've been buying so many Batman books and really enjoying reading them. I just got three Batman Beyond trade paperbacks the same day Scott mentioned it in the Shadow episode. What a coincidence. Me and my son are watching Batman the Animated Series on Blu-ray, and I can't wait to start Beyond right after that. Also, Batman Mask of the Phantasm is still one of my all-time favorites. It is very good. I love you guys like brothers. I'm so grateful for the hours of entertainment you have provided me while milking cows at a dairy farm during the night shift. I have listened to every episode, including the watch-alongs. Thank you so much, your friend Phil.
Oh, that person
night
also,
milking?
Also done that job? I used to have that job.
Oh, yeah? Night milking? You're
at
a night milker?
You had a night milking job?
Yeah. Night milking.
I'll tell you about it next time.
All right.
8 p.m., time for milking. Time for,
I was waiting for that. I knew there was a witness thing coming. That's fantastic. Thank you, Phil. That was really nice and also great points all around. If you would like to be like Phil and send us emails, you can.
I would blow so much money at that Dollarama buying comic trade paperback.
Oh, I know. I would ruin my bank account there. Yeah. That sounds awesome. I wish we had a dollar store that carried comics. They don't, the ones here. So, congratulations, Canada. You did it. Our next film is going to be King No. What did we decide? SWAT, the 2003, right? Is it 2003?
Something like that, yes.
The SWAT movie with Sam Jackson and your solo Cool J.
Ladies love Cool James.
That's right.
Yeah.
He's in there, a bunch of other people. Looks rad, and I never saw it, so I'm excited. A lot of people love this movie. We'll see if it holds up. And we check to make sure this is not eminently being canceled or moved. As many of you may have noticed today, we didn't talk about Iron Eagle like we said last time. Well,
yeah,
it's because it got yanked like right after we talked about it. So we'll try to be better about that whenever we can. Sometimes stuff just gets pulled and we can't do anything about it. But in the case of SWAT, should be there. Where is it at? Where is it streaming, Randy? I forgot.
Netflix of Net.
Yep. My brother literally calls it Netflix. I'm not kidding about
Netflix.
That.
Like, we did a lot of comms this week. Like, we tweeted about it. We the guy that does Quicksackly has the next coming movie pulling straight from our list. So, like, we did everything we could to let you know that it was going to be Quigley.
Yeah, we did all we could. Some of you still didn't hear, and we apologize for that. But follow us on Twitter at FilmSack, and you'll always be up to date. If you don't do the Twitter thing, then I guess I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, I mean, you can't really call it a wasted viewing of Iron Eagle, right? I mean, if they watched it before it got pulled, good for them. We didn't. And
we'll do it eventually. Lucky. We'll get around to it.
Yeah.
And when
did you mention the Discord channel?
We did in Discord. Yep, we did. Yeah. You should join our Discord. Unless you don't like Discord, then I don't know what to do for you then. I also put it in the Tadpool Facebook group, but if you don't like Facebook, I don't know what to do for you. There's a lot of these depend on you being on a platform. So if you're anti-platforms, there's really nothing I can do for you. Anyway, filmsack.com.
Maybe you should send out a newsletter.
Yeah, oh, I do have this newsletter, and I do mention FilmSack stuff on it. So if you go to frogpants.club and sign up for that, you'll get occasional notices. We usually don't, though. That's not normally the vehicle for saying, Iron Eagle got canceled. Y'all be ready for what? You know, I don't usually do that. But anyway, that's something to do. Filmsack.com is the website. You can go there anytime and sign up for everything. So go check it out and leave us those emails, filmsack@gmail.com. Like I said, we're on Twitter at FilmSack. And if you're up to it, leave us a review wherever you get your shows. Let's say you're listening to Spotify right now. Go leave us a review there. It helps others discover our show on that platform. That's going to do it for us. For me, for Brian, and for Randy.
Bye.
We'll see you next time.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Yes. Get more at frogpants.com.
Yeah.
I love hearing.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.